Greetings and welcome back to the broadcast. Today is May 2nd, 2017, and the website is www.scriptureandprophecy.com. And on Tuesdays, we work through the book of Revelation, or we're currently working through the book of Revelation, and today we're going to be going through Revelation chapter 17, and really the next few parts that we do will be about chapters 17 and 18, and this is probably going to be a 2 to 3 or 4 podcast series just dealing with Revelation 17 and 18 and dealing with the topic of Babylon the Great and the beast one world government that we see pictured here in 17 and 18. And so Friday, you know, I've been going through the Remnant series. We'll be resuming that next Friday. And this Friday, we're going to be dealing with this same chapter here, chapter 17. So today I'm going to deal with Babylon, Mystery Babylon a little bit. And then on Friday, we'll deal with the portion that's dealing with the beast. Just for the sake of time, you know. This is a topic that's probably caused me more aggravation. I don't think there's any topic that's caused me more frustration, more aggravation than the topic of Mystery Babylon the Great. And, you know, there are three major topics. Obviously, I'm studying all the time all kinds of different things related to the Bible and eschatology, but there's three major topics that I've really poured a lot of time into. Excuse me, that I've really poured a lot of hours and study into. And when I say hours, I mean a lot of hours. The three topics are the Hebrew language, which I continue to pour hours and hours into every week, and really have been for about 2 years now. The next topic will be the King James Bible and modern Bible translations, understanding, and the whole controversy about all of that, which I've shared some information with you guys on that. I've easily put 50 to 60 hours of study just into that one subject alone. But the third and most frustrating for me has been Mystery Babylon the Great. And I think, and when I say frustrating, what I mean is the mystery itself frustrates me. Not in like I'm an agitated way, but just like it challenges me a lot. And by the way, the title of Babylon the Great is not Mystery Babylon. We call it Mystery Babylon, but when we read it here, which we're getting ready to do, it's Mystery, comma, Babylon the Great. In other words, here's a mystery, Babylon the Great. And so we have to remember what the scriptures say. You know, if a man thinks he knows anything, he knows nothing yet that he ought to know. So let's be careful about having an attitude of, I definitely know what this is, and I've got it all figured out. Okay? We all look through the glass dimly. And So in regards to the Mystery Babylon, I have a few new thoughts and a couple of new positions that I want to present to you this week as we go through this topic. Please note that in these short podcasts, I can only scratch the surface with some of this stuff. And at some point, I really do need to do a full-blown study and video on this at some point. You know, that will likely be, you know, an hour and a half to 2 hours long. And let's also be reminded that prophecy is not for the purpose of knowing the future. A lot of people think it is. That's not the purpose of prophecy. It's for recognizing it when it comes to pass, for the sake of building your faith. It's so when you see it, you'll believe that Yahweh is the one true God. So in this study, I'm going to be pointing out some important points But I've decided not to say definitively who Babylon the Great is, because the truth be told, I'm not sure. There are a few great ideas. All are somewhat valid, but none of them fit perfectly at this time, which causes me to believe that there's more changes to come before we can clearly identify who Babylon the Great is, which is probably why she's called a mystery. I should also add that there's a Babylonian spirit, or you could say Antichrist spirit, that's really over the whole world at this point. That's why you see Babylonian and satanic idols and weird rituals and things like that all over the United States, all over Europe, and really over the whole world, just in different ways. But we need to understand that there's definitely a mystery Babylonian spirit that's infected the world, and the U.S. is definitely infected by it. Europe is definitely infected by it. And I speak to those two nations because I can see that with my own eyes more than I can what's going on in the East and the Middle East. Now, before we get in and read this, let me start by saying that what I've always taught and believed for the last several years is that Babylon the Great is America, is the United States of America. And I've done half a dozen to a dozen videos over the years pointing out all those reasons why, and you can go listen to those, and I'm pretty confident in those, in that belief when you go listen to those videos, and even the Revelation study that I did in 2015, just a little over a year ago, I present that point of view. I need to also point out that I'm not saying that America is in Babylon. But what I do want to point out, and what I am starting to recognize, is we tend to look at prophecy through Western eyes and to make it about ourselves and to make it about the United States, forgetting that America is only 5% of the world's population and is only a couple of hundred years old. We should also remember that the focal point of the scriptures has almost always been with the Middle East and the nations surrounding Israel. The Bible tells us that it's a mystery. And we need to remember, like I said just a few minutes ago, prophecy is not so you know the future, it's so you know the present, and when you see the prophecies being fulfilled in front of you. Now, there are three major views. Really, there's lots of views out there on this topic, but I would say there's three dominant views in regards to who is Babylon the Great. You've got those who think it's Rome, with the Roman Catholic Church, the Vatican. You've got those who believe it's the United States, which is the camp I've always leaned closest to. And you've got this idea that it's Mecca, that it's Saudi Arabia. And I've been seeing a lot of information on this, and there's a lot of compelling information about both the United States and Mecca. I really don't think it has anything to do with Rome. I think Rome's more involved with the beast, you know, Europe and some of those things, and we'll talk about that on Friday, with the Roman Catholic Church maybe merging with some other religions or, you know, part of the one world religion. But when we're dealing with Babylon the Great, I think it's either the United States or it's someplace in the Middle East, and I'm going to show you why here in just a minute. All three are worth considering, so I'm just going to say that up front. I'm considering the idea, like I said, that a Babylon is not America, but possibly a powerful city in the Middle East that is either developing now or will grow to power in the future. And like I said, I'm going to show you what's causing me to consider that as we go through this study, and I think you'll find it fascinating. I want you to remember that one thing that's different on this trip through the Book of Revelation that we're doing this year versus when we did it in 2015 is that I'm coming at it with an Old Testament understanding and researching those topics in the Old Testament versus when I did the study in 2015. So lots has changed. Even my view on the 144,000 has changed since we covered the 144,000 in this recent study just a couple months ago. And I'll share that thought with you hopefully soon in an upcoming podcast. I still think that Babylon could be America, so I want to be clear about that. Regardless, if America doesn't change its ways, it's going to be judged very harshly. Regardless, when Christ comes back, he's going to judge all the nations of the world. So unless there's a massive revival and a massive turnaround happens in the immediate future, no matter what, America's headed down a very, very dangerous road. Because remember, Peter said people who, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah is an example to nations that would live ungodly like this. And we need to remember that. Anyway, that might be the longest introduction I've ever done for the book of Revelation so far. So let's move on from that now and actually get into the meat of this. And I'm sorry I spent so much time on that, but I kind of wanted to set the stage of understanding. So let's go ahead and start our study by reading Revelation chapter 17. Revelation chapter 17. And there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials, and he talked with me, saying unto me, Come hither, and I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet collar, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abomination of the earth. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. And the angel said unto me, Wherefore dost thou marvel? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman, and of the beast that carrieth her, which hath seven heads and ten horns. The beast that thou sawest was, and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. And they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is. And here is the mind which hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth. And there are seven kings. Five are fallen, and one is. And another is not yet come, and when he cometh, he must continue a short space. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth, and is of the seventh, and goeth into perdition. The ten horns which thou sawest are the ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind, and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings. And they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful. And he said unto me, The waters which thou sawest, where the whore sitteth, are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. And the ten horns which thou sawest upon the beast, these shall hate the whore, and shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. For God had put it in their hearts to fulfill his will, and to agree and give their kingdom unto the beast, until the words of God shall be fulfilled. And the woman which thou sawest is that great city, which reigneth over the kings of the earth. All right, that is chapter 17. And then chapter 18 goes into even more detail about all this, and we'll get into that next Tuesday. Today and Thursday, we're going to be dealing with chapter 17. All right, so let's walk through this, and we're going to have to look at some Old Testament passages as well to get a full understanding. But let me just point out a couple of things before I do that. And sadly, my notes that I had written down for this have all disappeared, but luckily I've got this pretty much memorized. Alright, and there came one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials, and he talked with me, saying, "Come hither, and I will show you the judgment of the great whore that sits on many waters." Now, when it says sits on many waters, the angel gives us that interpretation, what that's talking about. He says, the water, in verse 15, the waters which thou sawest, where the whore sits, are people, multitudes, nations, and tongues. In other words, you know, she's controlling a lot of things going on in this world. She's controlling the world. She's reigning over the kings, in a sense. She's over many peoples, multitudes of in many nations and many tongues is what it means when it says she sits on many waters. Verse 2, it says, whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication with, and the inhabitants of the earth had made drunk with the wine for fornication. Now, I've seen some commentary and some videos and things from some pretty good scholars who believe that the wine is oil. And this is why they think that it could be Saudi Arabia or Mecca or something like that. And I have to admit that's a compelling thought, you know, because all the nations of the world are drunk when it comes to oil. And all the wars that we fight in some way is tied to energy and money. And it all wraps around oil, and oil controls the economies of the world. It's just like Russia. A lot of the moves they're making right now in the Middle East has to do with oil, right? There's a lot of Muslim nations and groups that hate Saudi Arabia, as an example, because they sell oil to places like the United States, which is the great Satan, according to them, right? So to them, that's they're whoring with, you know, with nations like the United States and Europe and so forth. So that's where that mindset comes. But I'm going to share some other things with you out of Isaiah and out of Jeremiah here in just a second. He carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, which I think is the right translation, but you should know that sometimes the word that's used for wilderness there is desert. But wilderness is probably right on. And I saw the woman sit upon scarlet-colored beast, full of names, blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color, and decked out with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand, full of abominations and the filthiness of her fornication. I should note, the purple and scarlet is not literally talking about the color of their garments. It's a picture of great wealth. That's what that means. That's the symbolism there, the purple and scarlet. Because a lot of people say, see, scarlet, it's the, you know, a Vatican, it's the cardinals or whatever. This is demonstrating her wealth. She wears purple and scarlet. She's decked out with gold and precious stones and pearls. She's got a golden cup in her hand. Okay? And of course, it's full of abominations and filthiness. And upon her forehead was the name written, Mystery, comma, meaning here's a mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth. And if I had more time, we could get into that more, but we need to move on. And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. Really, he's not saying I admired her. The point that's being made here is John is marveling, he's amazed, it's hard to believe what he's seeing is what this is getting at. We should note that whoever Babylon the Great is drunk on the blood of the saints. Okay, drunk on the martyrs of Jesus. You understand? It's specifically the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Now, when I look in the Middle East right now, remember, we covered this a few weeks ago, that Christian persecution is at record highs right now. And it was like what? I forget what the massive number was for 2016, around 90,000 or 900,000. It was a massive number, and I'll have to look that up. But we have great martyrdom taking place in the Middle East right now. If the United States is Babylon, then some things are going to have to really change. And we could see that because there's hostility towards Christianity right now, but it would have to go from hostility to all-out slaughter to fit Babylon the Great. So that's what I say when it could be the United States, but some things would have to change first. There's several things that would have to change in order for that to be true. Number one, she would have to be drunk on the blood of the saints. But we look at the Middle East and we already see that in a lot of those nations over there. The angels say, why do you marvel? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carrieth her, which hath seven heads and ten horns. It's also important to note that the beast and Babylon are two different things. When I listen to end time prophecy people, they're always speaking about the last day's government as if Babylon and the beast are the exact same thing. And I even heard a guy last night talking about how Jesus is going to come back and he's going to destroy Babylon, he's going to destroy the governments and all that. And I'm like, no. Revelation 17 specifically says that Babylon is destroyed and burnt with fire by the ten kings. And then the last day's beast government, which is made up of the ten kings who give their kingdom over to the beast, is destroyed by Christ. And we see that in Nebuchadnezzar's dream. We'll talk more about that on Friday. But they're not the same thing. The whore, Babylon, rides the beast. In other words, she's in control of things. She's manipulating things, controlling things through some type of power, whether that be money or oil or military or whatever. And I'm not going to read any more about the beast right now. I just wanted to cover Babylon. So there's some other places that talk about Mystery Babylon. And we specifically see it in Isaiah chapter 13. And we see it in Jeremiah chapter 51. So let's start with Isaiah chapter 13. I'm going to read a few verses. I read these to you last week, but there's some things that I didn't point out. Because we're trying to discover who Babylon is and where Babylon's located, and we can get some clues from Isaiah 13 and Jeremiah 51. So let's start by reading that. By the way, how do you know that Isaiah and Jeremiah are talking about a future Babylon when they were dealing with the Babylon of their time? And the reason we know that is because there's things that have not been fulfilled yet. Specifically, both of them claim that Babylon will never be inhabited again. It'll be destroyed that badly, which we also see in chapter 18 of the book of Revelation, which we'll read next week. The destruction is so bad it can never be inhabited again. This is how we know that there's not only a literal right now fulfillment when Isaiah was writing this, but a future fulfillment as well. So let's read part of this, and then we'll go check out some things in Jeremiah chapter 51 as well. Isaiah chapter 13 says the following: "The burden of Babylon, which Isaiah the son of Amos did see. Lift ye up a banner upon a high mountain. Exalt a voice unto them, shake the hand, that they may go into the gates of the nobles. I have commanded my sanctified ones, I have also called my mighty ones, from mine anger even them that rejoice in my highness. The noise of a multitude in the mountains, like as a great people, a tumultuous noise of the kingdoms of the nations gathered together. The Lord of hosts muster the host of the battle. They come from a far country, from the end of heaven, even the Lord and the weapons of his indignation," which means wrath, "to destroy the whole land. How ye, for the day of the Lord is at hand, it shall come as a destruction from the Almighty. Therefore shall all the hands be faint, and every man's heart shall melt. And they shall be afraid, pangs and sorrows shall take hold of them. They shall be in pain as a woman that travaileth. They shall be amazed one at another, their faces shall be as flames. Behold, the day of the Lord cometh cruel, both with wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he shall destroy the sinners thereof out of it. The stars of heaven and the constellations thereof shall not give their light, and the sun shall be darkened, and his going forth and the moon shall not cause her light to shine. And I will punish the world for their evil, and the wicked for their iniquity, and I will cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease, and I will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. I will make a man more precious than fine gold, even a man than the golden wedge of Ophir. Therefore I will shake the heavens, and the earth shall remove out of her place in the wrath of the Lord of hosts, and in the days of his fierce anger. And it shall be as a chaste roe, as a sheep that no man taketh up. They shall every man turn to his own people, and flee every one into his own land. Every one that is found shall be thrust through, and every one that is joined unto them shall fall by the sword. Their children also shall be dashed to pieces before their eyes. Their houses shall be spoiled, and their wives ravaged. There he's talking about the last day's judgment, which sounds awful, right? Now he's going to talk about Babylon here, and this is the part we want to focus on. Behold, I will stir up the Medes against them, which shall not regard silver, and as for gold, they shall not delight in it. Their bows shall dash the young men to pieces, and they shall have no pity on the fruit of the womb, and their eyes shall not spare children. And Babylon, the glory of the kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldees, excellency shall be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. So we're talking a fire and brimstone type annihilation. Verse 20, it shall never be inhabited. This is how we know it's a future fulfillment. It shall never be inhabited, neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation. Now listen to this next line. Neither shall the Arabian pitch tent there, neither shall shepherds make their fold there. This is one of the reasons I think this has got to be dealing with some place in the Middle East. Why would it specifically point out the fact that the Arabian, the Arab, will not pitch their tent there? Because it's been destroyed. And then it goes on to say, verse 21, but wild beasts of the desert shall lie there, and their houses shall be full of doleful creatures, and owls shall dwell there, and satyrs shall dance there, and the wild beasts of the island shall cry in their desolate houses, and dragons in their pleasant places. And her time is near to come, and her days shall not be prolonged. So that was one of the reasons that made me consider this might be dealing with the Middle East, because Isaiah specifically says the Arabian will not pitch tents there anymore, and because it's been completely desolated and no one will inhabit it again, it's inhabited by desert animals. I found that interesting. Let's go look at a couple of verses in Jeremiah, and then we'll wrap up the study for today. By the way, Jeremiah 51, the whole chapter is about Babylon. It's a fairly long chapter, and it might be worth your time studying. And Jeremiah speaks to it the same way Isaiah does. Towards the end, saying, you know, it'll never be inhabited again. But let's just read a few verses, and then we're going to wrap the podcast up. Thus says the Lord, behold, I will raise up against Babylon, and against them that dwell in the midst of them that rise up against me, a destroying wind. I will send into Babylon fanners that shall fan her, and shall empty her land. For in the day of trouble they shall be against her round about. Against him that bendeth, let the archer bend his bow, and against him that lifteth up himself up in his brigandine, and shall spare you not her young men, destroy yet utterly all of her host. Thus the slain shall fall in the land of the Chaldeans, and they that are thrust through in her streets. Real quick, we were reading that God raised up the Medes, against Babylon. And I've been doing some research on his, and this is what I've discovered. The Medes and the Persians, you've got, the Persians are Iran, modern day Iran. And what I keep finding in regards to the Medes, would be the modern day, I guess, Kurds. And so I found this little article, and I'm just going to read you this snippet real quick because I don't want to forget this part. Because in Isaiah, one of the specific places that people that were raised up against Babylon were the Kurds. And it says, okay, let's attempt to answer the question that seems to be asked more and more often every day. Are the biblical Medes today's Kurds? As ISIS stormed across Iraq, they were met with resistance by Kurds in northern Iraq. But who are the Kurds? Though generally Sunni Muslims, Kurds are not ethnically Arabs. In fact, many Kurds harbor hatred for the Arabs. They live in a vast area of the land called Kurdistan, stretching from eastern Turkey, across northern Syria and Iraq, into western Iran. So that's who the Kurds are and who the modern day Medes are. They're that area of Iraq, Turkey, Iran. And that's, you know, I've been doing some research on that. I wanted to share that with you to give you another idea of why I'm starting to lean more towards a Middle Eastern Babylon. All right, let's finish this up. Verse 5, for Israel hath not forsaken her, nor Judah of his God, for the Lord of hosts through their land was filled with sin against the Holy One of Israel. Flee out of the midst of Babylon, and deliver every man his soul. Be not cut off from her iniquity, for this is the time of the Lord's vengeance, and he will render unto her a recompense. Babylon hath been a golden cup in the Lord's hand. And remember, we just read that. What does it say? In Revelation 17, she has having a golden cup in her hand, right? And we see that same imagery here. And hath made all the earth drunken. We just read that in Revelation, right? All the nations are drunk off this wine that this place has. The nations have drunk of her wine. Therefore, the nations are mad. See, this is how we know that Jeremiah and Revelation are talking about the exact same thing. Look at this same language. Drunk on the wine. All the nations are drunk with her, have become mad with her. they have a golden cup in their hand. Let's continue. Babylon is suddenly fallen and destroyed. How for her? Take balm for her pain. If so, she may be healed. We would have healed Babylon, but she is not healed. Forsake her, and let us go everyone into their own country, for her judgment reacheth into the heavens, and is lifted up even to the skies. The Lord hath brought forth our righteousness. Come, and let us declare in Zion the work of the Lord of our God. Make bright the arrows, gather the shields. The Lord hath raised up the spirit of the kings of the Medes, which we just talked about. For his device is against Babylon to destroy it, because it is the vengeance of the Lord, the vengeance of his temple. Set up the standard upon the walls of Babylon, make the watch strong. Set upon the watchman, prepare the ambush. For the Lord hath devised and done that which spake against the inhabitants of Babylon. O thou that dwellest upon many waters. Again, same imagery. The book of Revelation tells us right from the beginning that she sits on many waters. Abundant in treasures. That's speaking to what we were talking about, dealing with, you know, arrayed in purple, decked out with gold and precious stones. Thine end is come, and the measure of thy covetousness. The Lord of hosts hath sworn by himself, saying, surely I will fill thee with men as with caterpillars, and they shall lift up a shout against thee. He hath made the earth by his power, hath established the world by his wisdom, and has stretched out the heavens by his understanding. I'm going to stop right there. You can go and read through the entire chapter of Jeremiah if you wish. And you really kind of have to take these together. You know, you have to go to get understanding. Again, I've talked about this so many times. When we're dealing with end times prophecy, to really get understanding, you got to know the Old Testament. You got to go research the connections. And so those are the connections that I've seen while doing this study. And I wanted to point them out to you. Again, I'm not definitively saying who's who, okay? I've decided not to do that this time. Because the truth is, I'm not sure, and there's a lot of things that still need to develop. But I wanted to show you why I'm starting to lean towards a Middle Eastern Babylon is because of all the things we just shared. The Arab won't pitch his tent there. The Medes are the ones who are raised up against her. The wine could be oil. There's so many things here. Desert animals will be there because it will be desolate. And so I wanted to share those thoughts with you. The drunk on the blood of the saints, which we can clearly see right now, and we have been seeing that for a very, very long time in those areas. So anyway, if you're like me, you may have more questions than answers at this point. And I apologize for that. I also apologize that if the podcast today seemed unprepared for my notes. I forgot to hit save. I put my notes into eSword, and when I'm reading the study, I read it out of a physical Bible, but then I look up to eSword on my computer screen for my notes. Well, I closed it out last night and forgot to save my notes, so here I am with absolutely no notes at all, believe it or not. And so I kind of had to just wing it on the fly there, so I apologize for that. But I hope that the point was still made. My goal was to give you some things to think about and some things to study in regards to Babylon. Now, on Friday, we're going to revisit this, except we're going to start looking at who the beast is, comparing it with the scriptures in Daniel, and try to get some ideas about what the beast may look like, who it may involve, and things of that nature. So I'm going to try to prepare that over the next few days, and hopefully I'll have my notes, because I'm going to need them for that part for sure, because I've done a lot less study, a lot less time put into the beast versus Mystery Babylon. That is my rambling for the day. I pray it blessed you. You can support this mission, support me, by becoming a Patreon subscriber. Go to patreon.com/truthfed, and you can subscribe at any dollar amount. You can just go to scriptureandprophecy.com, and there's a tab that says donate or support, and you can choose how you'd like to support the mission. There's a post office box, there's a donation button, and then of course there's a link to the Patreon page. So I want to thank those of you who do support this. You make this possible. You make it possible for me to get research materials and to keep up with the equipment that's necessary to do a good job at the podcast, to pay for the hosting, to buy me groceries. I mean, I appreciate you guys so much, and I just wanted to say thank you for all of that. That's all I got. Peace and grace be with you. I'll be back to continue this study on Friday. God bless.